remarks as a sermon done at warp speed. No, I didn't have the usual amount of time to prepare for this one. Pastor Paul contacted me yesterday and said, I'm really sick. And I said, you really shouldn't go to church. I'll preach. So I kind of threw this together. So we'll see how that goes. It was put together quickly. And I hope at the end that you can say that the gospel was preached. And it is also true and appropriate, I think, that we think of Mark's gospel as a gospel of at warp speed. Jesus is not sitting around contemplating anything for very long. Yes, today he goes out, and we're told that he goes out early in the morning to go out and to pray. But he didn't get to stay out there, does he? You will notice that he is mainly on the move. He is on the move from village to village in Galilee. And we're still in just in chapter 1 of the gospel. And you might notice that all the stories that have been told over the last few weeks and here in this place have been mostly about Jesus' healing ministry. There are broken people out there, and they seek a word of consolation. They seek wholeness in a world that doesn't make much sense to them, just like our world doesn't make sense much of the time to us. It is also true that in the first chapter of Mark, that John has already been arrested, Jesus has called his first four disciples, and he begins to heal the afflicted, including Peter's mother-in-law. No mother-in-law jokes allowed here. Not today, at least. In fact, I think there's something very interesting going on here. Because did you notice that after the healing was done, what's the first thing she does? She gets up and she serves people. Now, that's not because there was nobody there to take care of that sort of thing. But I suspect the word, well, the Greek word that was used is the same word we use for deacon, deaconess, deaconat, and I can't remember the correct pronunciation of the Greek. But it is those who understand that there's stuff that just needs to get done. Got any of those people in this church? Mm-hmm. Yeah. You need them, don't you? You know, because you'd all be running around going, well, why isn't there any coffee? Why isn't there any bread and wine up at the front? What's happened? There is a purpose behind that. Jesus is pointing us, and Simon Peter's mother-in-law is joining us and pointing us in the right direction. Jesus spends his time healing and being a servant, and not really teaching too much in Mark's gospel. There's less teaching material in Mark's gospel than any of the other gospels. But what he is doing is embodying his message through his actions and is telling us that there are things to be done. Wholeness to be proclaimed. Servanthood to be embraced. And hope to be given to a people oppressed and without much hope. These are the groups. You know, there's always groups who gather around Christianity and seem to think that the job is to withdraw from the world. They're the ones that go up. When I was a kid, there was a bunch of people that went up to Steptoe Butte in Whitman County to wait for the rapture. Ooh. Last time I heard, they're still waiting. That's not what Jesus wants us to be about. At the end of the day, yes, Jesus did withdraw into a quiet place. You need to be rejuvenated. That's what this place is for, is to rejuvenate. But I came across a devotion to yesterday that the writer Gareth Higgins write these words. Instead of withdrawing from the world, whether as individuals or groups or nations, we are called to be fully immersed in the places we are. Our contemplative practices are always ways of being more alive in the world and more active for the common good. To my way of thinking, that is precisely what Jesus does. He engages. He brings wholeness. He moves on to the next town to proclaim the good news again. And for those beleaguered people, there is hope given. And he will do it throughout the gospel. He never stops for long. The author has a way of putting it. Over and over again, he will say, and immediately Jesus did this, and immediately Jesus did that. Like I said, it's a gospel at warp speed. For most scholars, Mark is the earliest of our written gospels, written anywhere from 65 to 70 AD. And it's unique, not just because it's the first, but it's also the way in which the author tells the story. The story of Jesus is one where he lets the original readers and us in on it right away. It begins with the very first verse. The beginning of the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ, Son of God. That's how it begins. That's verse 1:1. No mystery there. No birth story either. It's Jesus, John, and baptism, and off we go. But what's interesting to me is the fact that we, the readers, know, but the people in the story don't know. And on top of that, Jesus tells the people not to tell anyone who he is. We hear that for the first time in today's lesson. For he commands the demons to tell no one. And it will not just be the demons throughout the gospel. It will be any who are healed by Jesus. Now, why would that be? It's what we call the messianic secret. Well, my interpretation has always been like this. Yes, it's a literary tool that's used to keep some sense of suspense there. But if you keep reading the gospel, I think you find another good reason for why Jesus tells the disciples and others who are healed to tell no one yet, to keep quiet. For in Mark's gospel, before you get very far, only over a chapter further, you come across this verse. The Pharisees went out and immediately conspired with the Herodians against him, how to destroy him. That's chapter 3, verse 6. That's real early. Already people are upset with him. He's throwing things up into the air. The powers that be do not know what to do, and they want to get rid of him. John has been arrested, and they are just fine with that, and they're going to be just fine when he loses his head in a few chapters later. Jesus has every reason to keep things a bit quiet at the beginning so that he can get the message out. And yet something continues to drive him, onward. Perhaps it is that spirit given to him in his baptism in Mark. He knows what he is about. And it isn't quite time for the whole world to know. Throughout the gospel, people come really close to knowing who he is. The demons always seem to know it, though I think that's more fear-driven than anything. Peter comes close when he confesses him as the Messiah a little bit later on, but then he quickly puts his foot in his mouth and tells Jesus to stop talking about going to the cross and following him to the cross. And he gets called Satan, which can mean a couple of different things. Can mean adversary, can mean accuser. It doesn't necessarily mean the devil, but it might. John even wanders from prison. And the chief priests and scribes and the Pharisees alike miss the point over and over again. Jesus is moving us to the cross, for it is that point where it all comes into focus. It is there where one will confess Jesus in his totality as the one who will suffer and the one who will die for us. And how interesting is it? It is a Roman centurion who says the words, "Truly, this is the Son of God." The whole gospel from beginning to end points us to the cross. and the need for us as followers of Jesus to come to that cross and to know that at this moment, that point that death doesn't win. Death is not the last word. Christ embraces our death and our fear and swallows them up. God will go all the way with us. That's the message to a heartbroken people. The way of love includes getting involved in the world, to engage as Jesus engaged in the areas that needed his presence, and those areas are out there that need our presence. Jesus doesn't escape from this world through his death. He embraces the life given to us and him. He heals those who are in need. He loves the ones who are unloved. He touches the untouchable. He brings hope to the oppressed. He looks out at us from the cross and asks us to follow him in that ministry of reconciliation, to be a voice for the of hope for the refugee, as the Bible tells us to be a voice of love in a world consumed by hate, to be like the centurion who gets it right at the cross. The good news is that we are not alone in doing this. Jesus has placed us in community to help and to support us. We are called, of course, in this community of faith to welcome the stranger and sometimes to say farewell to a beloved member, which I know you're doing today. And that's powerful. That's powerful. I've known Don a long time. Don and I were on Synod Council together way back. We were both a lot younger. But we were there serving, and look, he's still here serving. And y'all are still here serving. I think you got the point. Yes. We are placed here to receive a word of hope when you need it. We are placed here so that we might be fed with bread and wine and words of forgiveness as we stumble, because we all do, don't we? We did begin the service with confession and forgiveness, didn't we? Not a bad way to begin every week. To say, yeah, I kind of messed up this week, past week. And Jesus comes along and says, yeah, you did. I forgive you. Begin again. Those are words we can use. That, to me, is the gospel of Jesus Christ, Son of God. Amen. Amen. And I don't know what you're